You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene Johnson.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for doing, and we're here doing another AfterBuzz TV After Show for Downton Abbey Series 4, Episode 4. I'm John Comerford, and I'm joined in the studio by Tamara Berg.
Hey, everybody.
And Marissa Serafini is in the booth for us. Thank you very much for helping out, Marissa.
Hello, everyone.
Making sure we go off like clockwork.
Courtney couldn't be with us this week.
Courtney couldn't be
yeah,
with us this week.
She'll be with back next week.
Absolutely. Let's see, we had a lot going on, but this was more of a return to what we're used to in Downton Abbey from last week.
We still get
a lot of writing in, not only on our podcast, but about the show itself. A lot of, it's just, everything's a lit from the Twitter sphere, so to speak. And and let's get into that because, you know, last week you were talking about how they had 30 people writing into ITV. Obviously, that represented many more people who are angered by the thing. Now we have, I don't know, 90 people writing into ITV, but I'm sure it represents plenty of people.
Sure. There's some statistic in that about, you know, one person represents 100,000.
Like 10,000, I think.
Or,
yeah,
or 10,000.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the number is.
People, yeah.
Yeah. But, and it runs the gamut, by the way. It's not everybody's just mad. There's a lot of people who are mad that people who are mad, they're thinking, you know,
yes.
So the comments are running the gamut from people saying how this is horrible. How could you do this to Downton Abbey? You shouldn't dramatize this kind of thing. And other people are saying, are you kidding me? This is great. This makes great TV. And why can't you talk about a subject like this? So it runs the gamut.
So, yeah. So let me read a few of them.
Please.
One said that we missed the point.
Yeah.
That a lot more than people, 30 people were angry. And of course we know that.
Yeah, we're only talking about the people who, 30 people wrote in, not
right.
Everybody who was angered by it. So we weren't talking about those people.
But this Anna Borealis.
Mm-hmm.
Said many fans of Downton Abbey are fans primarily because of the lack of violence mm-hmm. in general. To show a beloved female character punched in the face and then brutally raped was just so unnecessary, she mm-hmm. said. I was shocked when John compared this to other so-called racy scenes in the series, such as Pamuk's death. How could you even refer to a rape as racy? It's more comparable to murder and torture than sex.
And on that note, I didn't refer to that. In fact, I think I was specifically saying that, no, it's not like that. I was referring to it as a dramatic device, I wasn't equating the two.
Well, and the word I think we actually used was spicy, and it was a word that you didn't say. It was
somebody
also written in another comment I had mentioned.
But I still think that's interesting because this particular event, horrific as it was, has garnered so much energy.
Energy,
my God,
exactly.
Yeah.
Controversy.
And I don't know if Julian Fellowes had planned that or if who knows if he thought that or if he just thought that's what, you
this
know,
is where the story goes from here.
This is where the story goes from here, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what I wanted to talk about right quick before we get into today's episode, because it was carried over, because Anna is still reeling from
it. We open with her,
absolutely. She's walking to Downton alone without Bates, avoiding him at all costs. In fact, snapping at him, making all kinds of excuses, and still reeling from this, as one would expect. And what the worst part about it was, she had to sit next to the perpetrator.
Indeed.
Which we were talking about last week. And it's like, oh, my God, this guy's going to be around. She's going to have to deal with this. And just that alone was just unnerving to see.
And terribly unnerving.
I can't believe – I mean, the fortitude. Now, there have been a lot of people who have been angered by Julian Fellowes making Anna out to be such a victim and not standing up to her attacker and all that. And I was even stunned by those kind of comments too.
Right. And one of the things – someone said that portraying this on the show was brave. Someone else said it wasn't brave.
Yeah.
It was 90s cliche.
Yeah.
Someone else said, but they didn't handle the subject at all. Anna chose to keep quiet about the rape, and so did Mrs. Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
They're all complicit in their silence. How the heck is that being sensitive and brave?
Yeah.
And you brought up a great comment about bravery.
Yeah, well, I mean, we would all love to be brave in the moment and do the exact right thing, but that doesn't mean that that's what happens. And a lot of people aren't that. They you know, let's face it, she's blaming herself. She's saying she's not good enough for Mr. Bates anymore. She's soiled. She's dirty. All those things. So she's the victim. She's blaming herself. And, what it can show is you can see a character's development of that bravery and that courage. If you start her with somebody who you'd want to stand up, but she doesn't, but now you've got somewhere to go. So you can actually demonstrate and emulate the path others might want to be or could take.
Yes.
In order to become brave or do the right thing or whatever.
Additionally, you can't portray someone being brave in an everyday situation. Yeah. It's not brave to dress Cora and, you know, get Mary's necklaces.
Right.
You have to put them in the face
in
of adversity in order for them
right.
to exhibit bravery and be able to bring up that fortitude.
And that being said, now, you know, I'm certainly not an advocate for dramatizing rape or anything like that, but because a lot of people were even thinking that people who thought it was good TV thought that meant that they liked rape or were advocates of it. I don't think that's what they're saying at all. It's just, it happened. And to say that you can't dramatize an event or an occurrence or an attack or something heinous. I mean, if everybody always did the right thing, then we'd have nothing to dramatize. And so what would be the point of anything? Because you couldn't do murdering, you couldn't do child abuse. And I'm not saying you should do those. I'm just saying you can dramatize that and still have it be a great TV. You can still have without being sensationalistic and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like, and
not everybody agrees with that.
Right, but a lot of people who stood up for Julian Fellowes pulling the storyline,
right.
were saying that it was portrayed very tastefully. Mm-hmm. And you know,
as it can be in this
well,
space, none of it's tasteful.
Thank you. Yeah.
It was shot and the way it wasn't gratuitous.
Thank
in that
you.
Sense.
That's what I meant. Yes.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was, you know, it leaves things to the imagination, which mm-hmm. is the scariest place
right.
to go.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, watching Anna be punched in the face.
Yeah, that was traumatic enough.
That was so horrifying
to
see.
Yes, it was horrible.
And the thing of what you don't see and how your mind fills in the blanks, that's, you know, really the painful part of it. And that's what makes a lot of good dramatizations excellent because it allows you to put into it, you know, your worst fears or your greatest adversities and that kind of thing.
And you know, the debate's going to go on because there are going to be people that have just decided, okay, I'm not watching Downton Abbey anymore because I used to watch it because it wasn't full of any kind of violence and you know, wasn't sensationalized. And now, forget it, I can't watch it anymore. And there are going to be other people on the other side who are saying, no, I think this is, I think it makes that more interesting and intriguing and compelling. And not that they think that rape is the only thing that does it, but it just happens.
Here's the thing. I was going to talk about it in the news. The numbers are actually up by 200,000 viewers
from last week. Interesting.
So, you know, you're an exception, but, you know, it's essentially women who are the demographic for this show. And if you've got something that's more, you know, there's more dramatic action going on, there are more you know, difficult, challenging storylines.
Right.
Maybe they're bringing in more viewers, and maybe some of them are male viewers or people who thought that Downton Abbey was a bunch of a puff and a bunch of people sitting around sipping tea. Now they've got, you know, more interesting, compelling stories going on because now more, even more people are watching over last week.
And I'm sure there are people going to go, oh, right. So you had to use that kind of event to bring in more viewers. And I'm sure they're going to, and I'm not even I'm not advocating, I'm not suggesting that, I'm not even making that debate. I'm saying he chose, Julian Fellowes chose to make this part of a storyline.
Yeah.
I mean, we can agree, we can not agree, but it is. I mean, it's not, we weren't in the room deciding for him. He chose this.
Right.
I think an artist, a creator has every right to make whatever decision he or she wants with whatever they want to
uses their
broadcast.
Media.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it, done well, I think it's great. I don't think you can say you can't. You shouldn't ever use this because it's like, okay, if that's the case, we should never have a murder on TV. We should never have any kind of child abuse or any topic like that because they're all heinous crimes.
Right.
And they're crimes against humanity and we shouldn't talk about them. We shouldn't dramatize them. And there can be an argument for that. And I can see somebody making an argument for that and being totally convicted upon
it. Yeah.
That. But I don't agree with that because I think you can learn or you can relate to people because you may never have experienced it, but you might be able to understand other people that have gone through that. You might mm-hmm. be more compassionate. You might be able to help people more if you understand it or see it dramatized. You might have more empathy. I mean, I think there's value in it and that you can, it can be used in a positive way. I don't agree with the act of it, especially in real life, but this isn't real life.
Right.
It didn't really happen.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of want, people are getting way upset over something that didn't actually happen. It was dramatized.
Another thing that I want to talk about is the controversy on
sure.
the show because people were saying, you know, I love my tea sipping Downton Abbey.
Right.
And Alexandra Delianis on our YouTube page says, Downton is no stranger to controversial storylines. Mary sleeping with her Turkish lover who dies in bed. Sybil and Tom's relationship. Sybil getting caught up with the suffragist movement. Homosexual relationships. Blackmail. The plight of Ireland. Murder. Death and childbirth. Death in childbirth and automatic automobile accidents to name a few. This last week's storyline was horrific, but I think it was handled well. Mm-hmm. To think about women's rights during this period, I think the assault on Anna will provide a springboard for the series to look more thoroughly at this topic. I love the lighthearted Downton Abbey, but it was great that it wants to discuss and explore more serious issues. So,
yeah, and I think that's what this is trying to do. I mean, as tastefully as they can, regardless of whether or not you think it's a good idea or a bad idea.
Right.
I mean, I think he's doing a very good job of trying to do it well and trying to do it seriously and sincerely and not sensationalize it. But I'm sure others have different ideas.
And I think another reason why, and we talked about this, I think it was last week, about the woman playing Rose, how she got hate mail
right.
when she came on. And she felt that part of the reason was because she came on so quickly after Sybil died. And mm-hmm. Sybil's death was such a surprise
right.
and so painful to see. It was, I mean, mm-hmm. I was, you know, a mess.
Yeah.
And so this is, I think, another kind of part of the situation where they've taken, mm-hmm. you know, one of the handful of really beloved characters,
right.
the
and
people that you want
horrible.
Only wonderful things to happen mm-hmm. to, and the worst thing happens to her.
And now this is, I'm not even sure I want to pose this, but I'll save it. We'll probably get letters for this too, but would there be such an outrage if it was Mrs. O'Brien?
That's what I was thinking.
I don't know. I don't know.
Probably because Julian Fellowes would write it so brilliantly that we would feel compassion towards Mrs. O'Brien.
But I'm not saying that it's easier or it's better if someone is raped than somebody else is. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just wondering how people would respond to it. I'm not saying I agree with it one way or another. I'm just wondering how people would respond if it happened to somebody that they already didn't like.
Yes.
I'm just wondering.
Well, you know, as you know, I'm waiting for not a terrible hunting accident.
Yes, exactly. Hunting accident, of course. So getting back to the storyline itself
yes.
and Anna, I was just so struck this week by how just that's the scene with Mrs. Hughes and how she's so, I mean, distraught about
Mrs.
how
she, Hughes?
Oh, no.
Or Anna.
Anna is how Anna was with Mrs. Hughes, describing how she doesn't want to be touched and she's not good enough for him anymore. She's soiled. And I was just heartbreaking to hear that, to see that.
Well, and the other thing, I must have made it happen.
Oh, that,
was one of the things
blaming
that she
herself,
said.
Exactly.
And
which, by the way, is a very common, response.
Obviously.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, just that. I mean, I must have made it happen. And Mrs. Hughes saying, but, you know, your husband's heart is breaking because he doesn't know what's going on.
Right.
And of course he's going to think it's him.
Right.
And Anna keeps reassuring him. It's nothing you've done. Before
right.
you ask me, it's still nothing you've mm-hmm. done.
And, you know, it's a great twist of word there by her saying it's better his heart broken than his neck. So we know exactly what she's still thinking, that she's saving him. And I'm sure she is intellectually. She realizes she's trying to save him from doing something horrible and ending up in prison. But I'm sure there's another part of her that just doesn't want to relive it, that can't even face telling him.
Yeah. Well, and can't go through what, you know, even in America, you know, I don't know what it is like in Europe, but I'm sure it's very similar. Even in America 20, 30 years ago, it was extremely difficult to bring up rape charges on someone.
Still, it's horrendous.
I mean, still it is too.
Yeah,
but at least there's a little bit of a change in the tide here.
Because you know, going in, the defense is going to try to, you know, drag you through the mud, put you on trial, and whatever your behavior is, and
just to speak to that again, people were saying someplace. I think it was on the Downton Abbey Facebook page.
Right.
You know, I can't believe that Anna hasn't said something, and I can't believe that Mrs. Hughes hasn't said something mm-hmm. to the authorities
right.
because Anna's worried about. Bates killing him, right. And this person said, how can he kill him if he's in police custody?
Right.
And I think that that's a 21st mentality put on a early 20th century
situation. It's 90 years ago that this happened.
Right.
I mean, we have a hard enough time getting rape charges brought upon anybody now, especially because this would be a he said, she said thing. There's no evidence.
Right.
So how is she going to get anybody to believe her?
Yeah.
With no proof.
Yeah.
And this is 90 years ago.
Which actually I think is an interesting thing about it because uh-huh. it really makes it the psychological challenge
right.
of the situation even more, you know, a bigger part of it. Obviously there's the physical,
sure, yeah.
you know, issue, but the psychological part of it is so interesting to delve into because it's so complex and so complicated from a story standpoint I'm talking
right.
about and how that's affecting Anna and Bates
right.
and Hughes
mm-hmm.
and every, you know, Mary is even mm-hmm. being brought into it mm-hmm. at this point because mm-hmm. everybody notices something's going on with
right.
Anna.
So I think the big thing for me is whether or not you agree with it. Julian Fellowes, I mean, he certainly struck a chord here. I mean, I don't know if he knew or was it, I'm sure he had some knowing that this was going to cause a big, huge, to-do, but I don't know if he knew it was going to be this big.
Yeah.
And he's going to lose fans and maybe gain fans. It's not a game here in terms of, I don't think he went out and said, I'm going to lose people here, I'm going right. to gain more at the end. I don't
right.
think he did that. It's just, I find it, just mind-boggling in some, how all this is. I mean, not mind-boggling. Just
well, people are really committed to this show and committed
yeah.
to the characters. And people said, "I'm never going to watch again after Matthew died." After Matthew died.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I'm sure
there are people who said it after Sybil died.
Well, I mean, I didn't follow the comments then. I'm sure they did, but I know people did after Matthew died, mm-hmm. and people are saying it now. And there's still
people
watching.
We'll see. No, we'll see. Who knows what they'll do.
It's an amazing show.
It is. And so, and it's certainly crazy water cooler talk for sure. People going
on and
on
about it. I thought
it
was interesting. There's so much angst mm-hmm. about the Anna situation. That as much as I felt just terrible for Bates and Anna and them together,
right.
I know that's going to break my heart a lot more next week.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was not a lot of it, you know, it can't be more than a few days. She still has the bruises on her face.
Well, no, it's the next
day. Oh, right,
day.
It was the next day.
The
right,
next
because
day.
They were having breakfast.
Yeah, and then so.
But through the whole episode,
it's
only a handful of days.
They went to London for a couple of days. Yeah, exactly.
And she still has bruises on her face. And anyone comes to her and touches her because Mrs. Hughes touched
her.
She even flinched there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but the direction was that they weren't spending a lot of time on Bates and the close-ups of his face, which is where we would really relate to him and his reaction. And so I'm assuming they're going to bring that out next week.
And, you know, again, I thought it handled well because you don't have to spend any time. We already know what's going on and it's already all there in Anna's, all her movements, all her face expressions, it's all there. You don't really have to spend a lot of time. And you know the storyline and it's any more than that. And you're going, oh, please, I just need a respite.
Emmy nomination.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's great. Obviously.
She's
Joanne.
Brilliant throughout the series.
Yeah, yeah, she has been. But I think, you know, we'll get to her later. The other one, Mrs. Hughes.
Okay.
But
yeah, let's,
before we get into that, let's go. Okay, I don't know if there's anything else I want to discuss because we've gone a lot about Anna and the situation.
Yes,
so
we
let's
have.
Move on. Let's get on to Mary. Anthony, as I say, Anthony, of course. Gillingham.
Sir Anthony Tony Gillingham.
Yes, Tony Gillingham. all this stuff happened, but really it doesn't really matter because the only thing that matters is
right.
that he proposed.
Yeah, we can talk blah, 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 this happened, yeah, this happened,
exactly.
But then
it's right. You know, he says, you know, I can't live without you. And he swoons and, you know, professes his love and proposes.
First thing I thought it was really fascinating was I liked him more than this episode than I did the last one.
They did a really good job of making you like him, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. Well, he was, last episode, I think the word I used was polished. He wasn't mm-hmm. as polished as
right.
I expected for Mary. And so in this one, his hair was combed a little neater. Mm-hmm. He was smiling mm-hmm. a little
right?
more. He was still wearing a tweed jacket at some mm-hmm. point, so mm-hmm. he wasn't, you know, the perfect tux man every moment of his life.
Mm-hmm.
But he just seemed a little more polished and just more likable in this one. And, because he was smitten.
Right.
Clearly smitten. And they did a great job of portraying that in this.
And they also did a great job of distancing him from his valet, Mr. Green.
Yes.
Because he says he doesn't even like him. So that allows
us. I thought that was fascinating that they put that in there because, again, someone commented, it reflects poorly on Gillingham when his valet is such a cat.
I know, you think about that, but hey, let's face it.
Criminal.
Let's face it, Cora's lady in waiting was Mrs. O'Brien.
O'Brien, yeah.
And it reflects badly on her too, but apparently that's just what happened. They do their job, and so however they are as individuals, so what?
Yeah, because how much does upstairs know about real identities of downstairs?
So far, not much in terms of what we're saying here at Downton.
Right.
But it does reflect bad then, but only because we know the horrific thing that he did.
Yes.
I don't think Lord Gillingham has any idea. And obviously, if he did, I don't think that he'd be long for this world.
No.
Meaning Mr. Green would be, well, certainly out of the Gillingham house. What?
Had a brainstorm.
What do you got?
Okay. So Gillingham proposes to Mary. Never mind that he's almost engaged to Mabel.
Right. Almost.
And Mary says no.
Okay. Yes.
And then later says, you know, I think that I may have done something that I may regret in the end, which was very interesting because she is kind of an ice queen.
Right.
She is obviously still closed off to love in a certain way, but there's a glimmer of it.
Sure.
I believe we know from tabloids that there is another love interest coming in for Mary.
Oh, I didn't. Okay.
I believe that's right. I'm pretty sure about that. But in my hopes for having a horrible hunting accident
for Mr. Green,
Gillingham can come back and that could be the thing that, you know, because trauma brings, or trauma or bad situations, negative situations bring people together, that people bond over bad things.
Right, of course. Yeah, that happens.
So that's how
I think
that could happen.
Okay,
so Gillingham comes back. There's a terrible hunting accident because he discovers what's going on with Green, and that's what brings him and Mary together, and then she no longer has regrets, marries him, and they all live happily ever after. End of show.
We just have to address one little quick note. Somebody was asking why we kept calling Mr. Green.
Oh, Gillingham Green.
Mr. Green.
Right.
And that's his real name, is Mr.
Green.
They call him Mr. Gillingham when he's in Downton Abbey because he's Mr. Gillingham's valet. That's how they do it. That was the custom.
Right.
Then,
we learned that in the Scotland
episode
went to Scotland for Christmas.
And
we figured it's just because it's easier to figure out who you serve rather than figure out your name and who you serve.
Exactly. So that's why. So that's why
he's called Gillingham.
We did it to avoid some confusion because we wanted to call Anthony Gillingham Lord Gillingham and Mr. Green, and not anyway. So
but we actually confused people.
I know we did a few. We
but
did
that's
a few
the
times.
Answer to that. Yeah.
So okay. So that's why we do it. But the thing I thought was most interesting is with the Mary and Anthony is when she's talking. You know, because she uses his words and his idea, meaning Anthony's, about how Mary fills his brain, and you know,
she's
still thinks about Matthew all the time.
Yes.
And she's not ready to let go.
Yes.
But then it was very interesting how that ended that sequence. That scene, especially when they do have that kiss, because it seemed like, whoa, something shifted right there.
But just before that, he said, but he's dead and I'm alive.
Well, yeah, and I was like, wow, it's another one. It's like, like a week ago, you forgot. And now he's so blatantly, I mean, I just thought that was a little harsh.
It was a little harsh, but he's consumed and he wants to get to.
Yeah, but he doesn't mince any words. He just says, he's dead, I'm alive.
But I loved, so she turns him down,
because
I felt like, you know, actors tend to be people who are very broad and very, you know, and that the subtlety in her portrayal of the no, you know, there was this like shadow that came across her face and then she just barely turned her head. And I felt like that was so carefully and beautifully done, her no, because there was also a shadow of a doubt in there, I think.
Yeah,
so then he says, my darling, I will never love you again
as
much as I do you in this moment. Right. May I have something to remember? May I kiss you?
Yeah.
And I just thought that was incredibly beautiful. And then his last words to her, my darling Mary, my prayers go with you in whatever you do.
Mm-hmm. So, and all, as it was happening, and as you were saying that, I was thinking, a lot of women's hearts are melting right now.
Well, what a beautiful sentiment, too, you know, to say to, that takes quite a man to go, to not go, screw you, lady, I'm out of here, you know. Instead, he gives her, you know, the greatest sort of au revoir he can give her.
Yeah. So it really got you, didn't it?
It did. I thought it was incredibly beautiful. I have two little hearts written on my ass right now.
So, but well, that's amazing because last week you weren't so sure about him, and then in just one episode, and let's face it, they were only a huge part of this episode. So that's some very good writing if you got to your heart to melt yours that way. So
and good direction and good acting.
Oh yeah, yeah, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Nice. Mm-hmm. So it worked for you. That's terrific.
Yeah. So. I mean, I didn't. I wasn't. I want to make sure I make this clear. It wasn't like I was swooning over him.
No,
I just felt like it was so beautifully portrayed, and I thought that was a lovely way to do it.
I know, and I thought, if nothing else, what it really did was to say, you know, there might be possibility for them.
Yes.
That and that makes the whole thing more tragic, where you just go,
agreed.
Oh, man. Now, and again, it's like, poor, poor Mary.
poor Mary. There's always got to be a poor, poor sister.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and we'll talk about it.
And we know, of course, all the things that she regrets, because at the end of the line, she says that she's going to regret this, or she may regret this.
I've just done something I may regret.
Right. And I think it was great that she said it to Tom, because for Tom, this whole episode was about regret.
Yeah,
he starts the episode talking about how he has nothing but regret, and he regretted the whole thing. And I don't think it was just the evening he was talking about. There's so much he regrets, and I felt really bad for him in this moment, because for me it wasn't just about his tryst with Edna. I thought that alleged tryst. Well, exactly. Who knows? But you know, in his mind, they actually slept together.
Of course.
But you know, last week he was talking about how he doesn't belong there, and I think he regrets a whole lot about that. And then this, of course, this thing happens with Edna, or so he thinks it happens, and she's gonna. Oh. And I just felt horrible for him. Because this guy can't get a break. I mean, his wife died. He's, you know, I mean, it's just, and he's a man between two worlds, and he's a man between two countries. And I just don't see – he's having a hard time finding his place.
Right. But we do have the Mary alliance with the estate.
Yeah, but that's in jeopardy too, because remember, he says he can't talk to her because she'll despise him.
But he was talking about the Edna thing.
Right, I know.
Okay,
but
okay.
I mean, again, I'm thinking he doesn't have some place that he finally finds Mrs. Hughes. But he – you know what I'm saying? You would hope that he would have – this is his sister-in-law. You'd hope he'd be able to talk to her, but he can't, and he has to go to Mrs. Hughes. He has to, again, go back to that
world. I would not talk to my brother-in-law about something like that.
Okay. Okay. Fine.
And but this is 100 years ago.
I know.
Years
ago, absolutely. So. Absolutely. I'm just saying that it further demonstrates that he doesn't really have a place. He's not upstairs.
Yes.
He's not he's forced to be downstairs, because I'm just saying that's where I felt so bad for the guy.
Yeah.
He's got nowhere to turn. And in fact, even Mrs. Hughes is surprised that she goes to him. He doesn't think it's a ringing endorsement that he had nowhere else to turn.
Well.
Not endorsement, excuse me, but go ahead.
Well, but the thing is remember, she was instrumental in getting Edna there in the first place, or second place, as it were.
Oh, yeah. There's no question that he picked the right person, because who else would he go to? It's either her or Carson.
Right.
And Carson, you're not going to get too much help from.
No.
So, and the thing I love about Mrs. Hughes is she'll give you compassion, but man, did she turn the screws to Edna.
Nice, right?
That was great.
So I remember her from Lovejoy.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is,
Lady
gosh,
Jane.
15 years ago, playing
20,
Lady Jane.
I think. But anyway,
Loved that show.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, she's, I think, another one of the kind of beloved characters on the show.
And I think the most underrated character and actress on the show, I think.
Really?
For me.
Tell me why.
I just think she does a great job. And a lot of, you know, some people were talking on the boards, they don't like the fact that she didn't step forward and go to the authorities. But I like it because she does, you know, like, let's face it, when she had that moment with Carson, when he says it doesn't change,
she's dead.
And she picks somebody else, and now they're dead, and doesn't change anything. And she says, it changes you from where I'm looking.
Yeah.
And the way she did that with the drinking of the glass and looking at she just has these wonderful little moments, and you feel all this compassion, but you feel such great strength. And really, when she's putting the screws to Edna, you're going, yeah, there you go. I mean, she knows. I mean, and she's calling a bluff.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing's a ruse. She doesn't got anything on it.
Well, and I think she's a really strong character because, again, some people are kind of criticizing, and I think it's the 21st century mentality going over a 20th century situation. Because if you'll remember when Mrs. Patmore was sick and she was accompanying her, and then when the converse happened as well, when Mrs. Hughes was sick, there was all this strength going on while playing within the confines of society,
right,
whatever society you're in that time. You know, I just felt like, I feel like she's such a, she's a strong woman. She's
right.
One of the strong women on the show, and mm-hmm. I love that about her.
Well, that's why I like her, is that not only she's a strong woman, but she's very compassionate as well. You can see, she seems to care about people, yet she's a fighter at the same time, and, you know. And
she knows the rules.
Yeah. She knows the rules.
And knows how to
She can navigate them. Yeah, she knows how to get around them. And I just love all that. To me, she reminds me of the Dowager in some degrees, because, you know, the Dowager knows how to get what she wants.
Yes, she does.
Moving around things. And, you know, I just think there's a nice counterpoint between the two. So, and of course, and, you know, let's face it, the way she was dealing with Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Just by giving him the framed photo and everything like that, this really meant something. In the whole time when that was happening with the something Charlies, what are they called? The Charming Charlies? And
yes.
Is that what it was? And she was trying to get Carson to put it behind him, this is a wound you need to bury and all this stuff. And she's creating a healing for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting him to not only acknowledge that there was love there, but it did affect him, and that it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Even though it didn't change, quote, his particular
situation.
Trajectory. Exactly. And, you know, it could if you wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is setting up the whole thing between the two of them.
Yes,
I mean, you see all the compassion she has for him. And you see that she cares for him so much that she's trying, you know, it's because it's kind of a strange thing to give somebody a picture of a woman.
Of his one and only love.
Exactly. And because, you, in my mind, there's some romantic
kindling.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a strange gift. But in a way, it's an incredibly loving gift.
Yes, I agree.
So, anyway. But I wanted to finish up with Tom.
Speaking to Hughes, one of the things that she said, well, this is a sordid tale. Just loved that line. Because, you know, there was a tiny bit of humor in that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it had everything to do with the fact that she knew she was going to figure out how to help.
Yeah, and that Kim is a great turn.
This is a sordid tale.
I had no idea that's how they were going. Because when Edna came into the room and she thinks she's going to get bought off, and none of that happens, I'm going, well, what the heck is her plan? What is Mrs. Hughes' plan? Well, how is she going to get out of this?
Right?
And I bought everything. I was like, she can't have all that info. But okay, all right. Yeah, don't mess with her.
Yep.
And it doesn't. And it worked.
The book, Married Love, by Marie Stopes from 1918.
Nice. Damn, we're doing some research.
I have this great, as you know, I have this great book that's called Hi There, High School. That was written in like 1952, yeah. Incredibly antiquated rules for how to get into the Glee Club. And I'm sure that I tried to get a little more information about that book, but essentially Mrs. Hughes was talking about it being the thing to help her prevent getting pregnant
right.
in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that was why she was using it as a resource. So, yeah,
she's
just bluffing, though.
She's crafty.
Just bluffing the whole way.
Yeah.
I don't want to play poker with Mrs. Hughes.
No, God, no. She's got too much experience, man.
No.
But, I mean, I thought it worked. So, and now Edna's gone, which I was surprised by. Really, you're going to get rid of her that quickly?
I know.
Because, you know, I thought she was great in terms of the conflict and the drama and stuff.
Well, it's because there's another love interest for Tom coming in.
I know. But, again, you know, I was posing the idea that it would be great to have the three of them there so you have the nice triangle. And, you know, hell hath no fury, like a woman scorned, and she would be scorned. And, you know,
might come back.
Who knows?
She might come back.
How are they going to bring her back now? And everybody knows now, and she's gone. The whole reason why she left is because she wants to keep the reference. I don't think she's going to find her way back.
All right. Okay.
So, but it's too bad. I'm sure Julian will do better than I was thinking, but I thought it would have been fun to have the three of them, Tom and Edna and the nanny, and have that happen.
There will be some great drama.
I would have loved
somehow
to see Edna being scorned and
the fire coming
what
out.
What she could come out. Because let's face it, in the hallway with Thomas and all that little between the two of them and all that venom.
Yes.
Wow. Huh? I mean, and Thomas is like, whoa, I thought they were in cahoots for a while there, and apparently not so. Or maybe, you know, because, you know, it's like a scorpion. You don't have anybody else to turn your tail on. You just, the one in front of you.
Whoever's there.
Exactly. You just go after them.
Whoever.
That's right. So, but that was a fun little scene on the stairwell.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of, what was it, interesting play on words or whatever. I wrote it down, but anyway. Lots of fun there. And poor Edna is now gone.
Bye-bye.
Do you think, usually you wait for a season before you have to get, they want to leave the show, right?
I know, right?
Yeah, no, gone.
Mm-mm. Bye.
So.
Okay.
All right. So, before we go any further, thank you guys for everything, for writing up on the boards and going on YouTube and giving your comments and your theories about what's playing out and what the things your likes, your dislikes, and whether or not you agree with Julian Fell's choice to use whatever dramatic device. Those things are fascinating to us.
Yeah, obviously we had a lot of good conversation about it, so we really appreciate
stuff.
That.
So keep those coming. Please go to YouTube. You can go to iTunes. You can download. You can rate and comment. You can tell a friend. We're hoping that we can get more people involved in the conversation. We'd like to start it here, and hopefully you'll continue it and spread the word and get it out to everybody. So thanks for that. Now what I want to talk about is the whole Jimmy. Let's move on to something a little lighter. We're going
to the kitchen.
We're going downstairs. We'll go to Jimmy and Ivy sneaking away. Have a little kissy face.
There is some chemistry.
Snogging. Is that the right term? Snogging?
I believe so.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah. So, yeah, chemistry and not just in the kitchen. In the boot room.
The boot room.
I didn't even know that I'm
smells
sure.
Smells like old shoes polish.
I'm sure they've talked
very
about
romantic.
It and been there before, but it was the first time I actually got on my radar as a name for a room, a boot room.
The boot room.
So, and of course, you know, Daisy doing her little machination so that Alfred can catch them kissing.
Right.
Back, so. And, you know, still trying, hoping upon hope. And I love Patmore's line, too. I think, what was the line about how?
Sometimes you can spend too long on a one-sided love.
Yeah, and she really wants, you know, and again, Patmore continuing the friendship that they're developing and that they certainly showed last week between Patmore and Daisy.
Yes.
She's trying to help her along because this is, you know, it's unrequited. It's not going to be returned in any way and you got to move on. And maybe it's a good thing that Alfred leaves and goes and tries off being a chef.
Mm-hmm.
So and so they have this contest, I guess, that
they're
going to go to?
Right, a test.
Right.
A test so that you can see if you're worthy of getting into this program.
I love the program. Are you kidding me? They're going to pay you wages. They're going to teach you. I go, wow, that's not bad. I wonder, you know, so I guess he's going to go because we have wind that he may not be back, right?
Yes, we do. We're just burning all of our predictions and our news
exactly,
as the show goes on. But
bad.
There's word that he's not going to be on the show anymore. So,
but what's interesting about the whole storyline between the Jimmy and Ivy, so obviously they have two completely different goals. She wants to be a good cook. She wants to do a good job. She wants to have a career. In a sense, she's career minded. I mean, she's trying to do good work. Jimmy doesn't seem to care about any of that. He has different hopes, dreams. I mean, it looks like he just wants to be a playboy and have fun.
Well, that's what he says.
Yeah.
You know, I want to drink champagne and have fun.
Yeah, that's it.
And, you know, not just have fun, but have a rich life, it
sounds
like.
Oh, yeah.
Because he didn't say, I want to drink beer. He said, I want to drink champagne.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, is he going to think he's going to get there through his gambling? Or how? I mean, he doesn't seem to have any notion of how to get that or create that or earn that. Nothing.
But, you know, I mean, lots of people have that dream.
But
I have that dream, except I do have a plan.
But my point about the whole thing is that they obviously have them kissing now, and he seems to actively pursuing her, and not just to get Alfred, because he did this not in front of Alfred.
Right.
He did this, you know, spirited
her
away.
Just when they were alone.
And so, or secreted her away. So, he seems to, you know, and it's not just to get at Alfred. So my point is, okay, so what's Julian doing? He's setting these two people up who have completely different ideas of how they want to live their lives. So are we just setting up more heartache?
Yes.
You think that's going to happen?
Yes.
We do.
Well, you know, they're talking about how, Alfred, you could go try out for this, but so could Daisy and so could Ivy.
Right.
And Daisy seems a little bit interested, or is she just more interested in knowing what?
Yeah, I didn't get that. I'm going, how are they going to
do Ivy a little bit interested?
No, I didn't feel, not
no.
really, not to a serious degree. Certainly not like Alfred.
So.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm not sure what Julian Fellows has up his sleeve
know.
On this one.
I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. But I would love to hear what other people think.
Yeah.
So write in about that. See what you think. Because, again, we posed the question last week. What is Daisy doing about the whole father-in-law?
Right.
And
we talked about that.
Yeah,
right.
So where is that storyline gone?
And
what's going to happen to it? And, if Alfred is out of the picture, what is Daisy going to, what is she going to do? Is she going to look for another thing to occupy her time?
In the sense of a new beau?
Or is she going to be actively pursuing this offer from her father-in-law?
Right.
To create this new business or work the land or farm, whatever the heck it was exactly. I can't remember.
Get her own new electric mixer?
Yeah, exactly. And, anyway, I just wondering when they're going to get back to, or if they'll ever bring that back.
Right.
So,
we're four episodes in, so.
I know. You'd think at some point we're going to have to.
Yeah, I think, one of the things I do think is interesting is that Daisy really used to be poor Daisy. I mean, she was the scullery maid, or, the kitchen equivalent of that.
Yeah.
And she really got to do nothing.
Right.
And now she's asserting herself. And there was, you know, there was a time where she was kind of going on strike.
Yeah.
I think it was last season.
Snarky to Ivy today.
Yeah. Well, she can be snarky for sure.
Yeah.
But it's, I like to see her coming up and having kind of a personality.
Yeah.
But there's not really anybody to take her place of the lowliest of the lowly.
Well, just Ivy.
Right.
And, you know, and
but Ivy kind of won't take it. She won't play that game.
No, she
really
doesn't. Not like Daisy did. So
yeah.
I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I think Daisy's a little bit younger, too, and maybe came from different circumstances.
Or, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that makes me move on to Isabel, because on the other side of that, we got to see Isabel. And again, we saw her with the doctor just briefly.
Yes, we did. I'm telling you, they are building that up.
They are. He just keeps touching on, he just keeps reminding us, look how good they are together and how they make a great team. We talked about it last week. I think that he's just going to keep that going.
Yep. I can use some extra help.
Yeah. And she says later that she's just going to offer her help, you know.
Well, what was this comment, though? It could leave the knights for other duties.
Well, I don't know. What other duties do you think the doctor was talking about?
I'm not sure he's talking about duties. I think he's talking about opportunities.
Oh, is that right?
Like perhaps dates. Perhaps dates.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think because of the way they left that in the prior series that I don't think he's going to pursue it. She's going to have to open the door because she closed it pretty tightly on him. So I don't think he's going to actually.
Well, and I think that her heartbreak is part of the reason why she will be open to it, because there's such a void in her life with Matthew being gone that there's an opportunity for her to have that filled to some degree, to have love in her life.
And her words, you know, because she's her child died, she's no longer a mother, but she is still a woman. And so I think that will be that opportunity.
She's another wonderful actress, by the way.
She's great in everything.
So, she really is. The pathos that woman has.
Oh, my God.
Just incredible.
Yeah. And even the way the Dowager talked about her.
Right. Yes, definitely. I wanted to talk about that.
Go
ahead. She says, you know, when they were talking together, I love that they're putting them into scenes together because they were so at odds. We talked about that last week.
And they've moved that relationship along.
And her saying, Isabel saying, it is hard to see Mary come alive. And the Dowager saying, well, you know, I don't criticize you in that.
Right. Yeah.
And then later, when the Dowager is talking to
Lord Grantham
and saying, well, she is a good woman, and as much as it
cuts my teeth. Something like that, but it pains her, basically.
Nails on a chalkboard, something like that. There are moments when her virtue demands admiration.
I know.
What a great way of putting
that. Especially when you think about how far they've come. We talked about it last week, and it bears repeating, but it's wonderful to see that relationship arc the way it has. And that's what I appreciate more than anything. I'll say it last week. I said it last week. I'm going to say this part again, too, is I like the way Julian moves these characters along an arc. They don't always do the same thing, and that's what gets repetitive about a lot of other TV shows.
Uh-huh.
They don't arc the characters the same thing all the time, and I find that uninteresting.
Well, and you know, we're going to have Shirley MacLaine come back sometime in the series, so it's going to be interesting because those three will probably be thrown into the mix together. They will have some scenes together. It'll be interesting to see what transpires there. That'll be some big fun.
That will be fun. Let's move on to Rose. Oh, Rose. Seriously, again, she just can't help herself. Gets involved with somebody, you know, just gets into it. Can't wait to go out. Just always wants to go. Girls want to have fun. But it goes out and Lord John gets drunk.
Yeah.
At the jazz club.
Really drunk. He's making a fool of himself and her.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, funny though, because normally she's the one that kind of makes a fool out of everybody, or not fool out of everybody, but goes too far. But it was good to see her on the other side going, let's
help.
Exactly. But who comes to her rescue?
Jack Ross,
The jazz singer.
The gallant jazz singer.
Ooh, very nice, very
handsome
nice.
Handsome too, I might
add. Oh, is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay, there we go. Mm-hmm. So, and of course this causes Aunt Rosamond.
Yes.
Certainly, he's like, whoa, that's a little shocking.
Right.
It's 1923 still. So,
right.
And, oh, my God, Tom, go rescue her. And, you know, but very, very kind of understated about how it all went down and everything. But certainly, they're shocking concern. And let's quell this, I guess.
Yeah, nip this in the bud,
exactly,
whatever this is.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to be able to do that. I think Rose is going to pursue that.
I have a little info in the news that we'll talk about.
Okay,
do you want to talk about
it? No, we can talk about it in the news.
Well, do you want me to mention it now?
Yeah, go ahead then.
Okay, right. We're going to do news, Marissa.
We didn't talk either.
I know. That's why I was saying I don't want to do the news.
All right. That's fine. Well, I'm sorry. We're not doing the news yet.
My mistake.
I thought you were just going to talk about this and then we would do news.
No. Okay. In the news, I have some stuff that we can talk about him and future episodes.
So let's finish up with Edith real quick.
Sorry. Miscommunication.
My bad. All right. So, because, you know, we were doing poor Edith and now, not so poor Edith.
Okay. No. Wait. Sorry. Back to Jack Ross.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure everybody knows. It was pretty obvious, but in case you didn't, it was a cool little Easter egg, which was as she's being hustled out of the room, he's singing, "A rose is always sweeter."
Yeah,
rose as he's kind of like, sorry, and waves to her, gives her that, you know?
Yeah.
Rose likes the attention.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah,
and so, she's young and, you know, but she just, I'm wondering, you know, because I don't know her age. I still haven't figured that out. She's got to be 17 or whatever. Anyway, I think about Mary and I go, was Mary ever like that?
No.
I don't know. I just find that fascinating. Okay.
Well, you know, Mary's social status is higher than Rose's.
Is she?
Is.
I mean, because.
She's the daughter of a lord as opposed to a cousin of a lord.
But weren't, well, who are their parents? Aren't their parents, they're not lords? Isn't Rose's parents
Rose's
a lord
father?
And lady? Yeah, I don't remember their name, their title. Excuse me.
Maybe they are.
Help us out. Sorry about that, fans. I know that we're going to get a lot of letters that we don't know that detail.
Right, but they were up in Scotland and,
yeah, I know.
You know, Downton Abbey is...
Yeah, but name's town.
In the more fabulous part of town. Okay. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But clearly their parenting skills are different, nothing else. So Mary was raised as kind of the more reserved, proper lady, and Rose
unless
there's a Turkish ambassador in town. And Rose obviously, you know, eschewed that training that may have been put her way. So, she's a girl who wants to have fun.
Yeah, and so does Edith, apparently.
Oh, Edith.
Apparently.
Edith showing her shoulders everywhere.
Oh, my God. Just a hussy.
Scandal.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, stays overnight at Michael Gregson's.
Uh-huh. Does the walk of shame next morning.
He sneaks in.
Yeah.
And the rose and the maid catches her, of course. I thought she got the dressing down from the Aunt Rosamond.
Yes, she did.
Properly chided, admonished the whole thing. Man, it was nice. I mean, it was just good TV and great.
Totally
great,
busted.
Great
scene. I have to say, I hate that orange dress she was wearing when she came into Rosamond. She's worn it before and I just hate it.
Hate it.
But yeah, Rosamond saying, you are gambling with your future.
Yeah.
What? I'm not exactly sure what that means.
Well, because if she gets her reputation is sullied in any way by this
dalliance.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Then that could hurt her chances for what she might marry into.
Right.
Because, you know, she'll be suspect.
Right. So. But so they Rosamond as must not take Gregson seriously as a suitor for
her. No. Well, I don't think any of them feel, I mean, he may be a nice guy. Even let's face it, Lord Grantham is, you know, feeling a little bit better about him because of the whole poker incident.
I don't
think that he's appropriate. Lord Grantham has already said that everybody, you know, they want her to marry up, and I don't think this is the thing that they want for her.
Well, they're about ready for a rude awakening, I think.
Because
Edith is not
complete.
She's dead serious about this guy.
Yeah,
she's going to marry him,
or not marry him, whatever the case. But she's going to be with him,
right?
So, and you know, he's off to Munich,
right?
To go get his
right. So he's off to Munich.
And what did she?
And wants to have her sign a paper.
Yeah, and she didn't even read it. She doesn't have Murray read it. Nothing. She just signs it. I'm just going, oh my God. I don't know what that's going to get her into.
To
but
give
it just
her authority over his affairs.
Yeah, and maybe it's nothing, but I'm just going, what are you, no, you're not even reading that? Or, you know, and I think she would know better because, you know, to some degree, she's just aware that you shouldn't be signing anything without Murray looking at it because even her dad doesn't sign anything.
Right.
So
you think it's going to be something that turns out bad for Edith somehow?
Yeah, I don't think, I'm not saying that Michael Gregson is you know,
sinister.
He's not doing anything underhanded, but I think because her name is on it, it's going to put her in jeopardy in some fashion because, you know, and they're going to be the conversation, why didn't you let us read this first? Why are you signing this?
Right.
It's going to be one of those things, and she's going to go, because I love him, and I didn't think this would be,
See, where I went with it was that he's going to get stuck in Munich or something's going to happen, and she's actually going to have the opportunity to kind of save the day because she has access to his affairs.
Or
power of attorney or whatever that would be.
Is he the editor of this paper? Or that he?
Yes.
Or is he part owner?
Probably both, but I believe he's the editor.
Interesting, because if
Because that could make her a newspaper heiress.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, if that's, you know, who knows if she has a power of attorney or something.
Yeah, degree. Yeah, it's interesting because I thought it was going to be something, you know, give her the opportunity, maybe an opportunity she wouldn't want, but an opportunity to kind of save the day as opposed to, you know, more ruin.
You know, the one thing I really liked about what Edith said to Aunt Rosamond when, you know, she's being admonished and everything.
Yeah.
And it turns to her and says, well, that was rather rude. Or what was it that you said? That was nasty. That was quite
rude.
Yes,
that was quite nasty.
Quite nasty. And so often I've wanted somebody to actually say something.
Right?
Just so, you know, that was rude. You know?
Right.
And Edith finally did.
Right.
Yeah, I just like that because they say a lot of rude things to each other.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Not that some of them aren't warranted. But
in very pretty words that you think you're being complimented.
Exactly. And then nobody calls anybody on it.
Right.
And so I think that was great. And it also showed her kind of standing up for herself.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now I think we closed out everything that we need to get to and we can get back to our news. Sorry.
AfterBuzz TV News.
After the news, I want to talk about favorite lines of the show.
Got it.
Just one comment that was on a Facebook page that I loved and wanted to mention in the news. Mary Herbert said, Episode 4 ripped my heart out. Anytime you want to stop making my eyes bloodshot and my soul hurt will be fan-bloody-tastic. Just cracked me up. I think a lot
this
of us
feel
that way.
This is about episode 4 or was that about episode 3? Okay.
This episode.
This episode, okay.
Mm-hmm. Episode 4.
Wow. Nice. That's a good comment.
yeah, it just cracked me up. So I mentioned this earlier, Downton Abbey boosted ratings to a peak audience of 10.1 million viewers.
Wow.
And averaged 9.4 million throughout the entire show, up 200,000 viewers
for
this week from last week.
Okay.
Yeah, so whatever you make of that, that's it. I want to talk a little bit about, oh my God, I've lost his name, Carr.
Oh, you're talking
about one moment. Gary Carr, who plays Jack Ross, the singer.
Okay.
We have a photo. This is him.
Oh, wow.
Looking a lot like the Dowager. he's got, for those of you who are listening to us on iTunes, he's got an Edwardian updo and a bit of a feathered headdress.
And dressed as a woman.
Dressed as a woman. It is a thing that he did in college.
Yeah. So.
We have another photo here that's maybe a little more appealing to the ladies. So he is playing singer Jack Ross, and that's actually his first love.
Oh, really?
Singing.
Okay.
He's getting ready to put out an album of original music, and this is a huge break for him. So a couple of interesting things that he said is that his character is going to be drawn to both Lady Mary and Lady Rose.
Oh.
Both of these two characters end up being quite prominent in his life, and he has to ask a lot of questions about himself as he is drawn closer to certain characters. Also, he shows up at Downton Abbey.
Is this another suitor for Lady Mary? Is that what we're thinking?
I don't think so, but
I think it's more likely that Rose is going to find an attachment to him.
Right, and maybe Mary's going to do what Matthew did before, which is, you know, kind of steer her away and get Rose out of a bad situation.
Right.
Possibility. He says his mother and sister are crazy Downton fans, and they cannot believe that he's on the show, but his grandparents live in Trinidad, and it's one of the few countries where Downton is not shown on TV. Uh-huh. Clive, his grandfather, who is 80, said, it would have been nice to see Gary in the show, but we will have to wait for a DVD.
Yeah. So if he's going to be a Downer, is Julian Fellowes and Downton Abbey going to start tackling race?
Well, they're saying that it's not going to be storylines about prejudice so much as ignorance.
Okay. All right.
So it's, and that was Gary Carr saying that.
Okay.
That's his interpretation of the scripts. So, and by the way, he spoke on the Anna storyline and said, I think it was extremely well written and extremely well acted.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting to see how a woman would deal with rape back then. It's not like today. She wouldn't have lawyers or any support mechanism.
Right.
And he says he's a singer and a dancer first, actor after that. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Okay. He did a fine job singing.
Yes, he did. And I'm sure we're going to get to see more. That'll be really fun.
Maybe they're going to bring him to Downton Abbey like they brought the diva.
Yes.
The opera singer.
Yes.
And they'll make him eat upstairs on a tray.
Right, upstairs on a tray. Not yeah. because he's a singer.
No.
Because he's, I mean, not because he's black, no, but because he's a singer.
Yeah, sure.
That's all I have for news.
Okay. You know what? I don't think we're out of time for predictions, so I think we're going to have to go to favorite lines.
Oh, my goodness!
We got to go. Get to favorite lines. What was yours?
My favorite line was, so, another brick is pulled from the wall.
That was mine!
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Maggie Smith, why are you in your rompers talking about, do you have the other, you want to talk about the Edith one?
Which one was that?
Tell me your favorite line from the show.
It was the rompers.
Tell me your favorite line from the show,
my line was the Dowager saying another brick was pulled from the wall. Okay.
Great.
Well, apparently we're getting a note that we have time for predictions. Okay.
Oh.
All right. So we will. Thank you very much for letting us
know.
I'll do my other. What was your line?
My other favorite line was, Edith is about as mysterious as a bucket.
All right, you win.
Once again, you showing win. That the sisters are
not necessarily
great fans of each other.
No, not at all. Okay, we'll do predictions.
Predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
I'm going to do a prediction about Tom.
Okay.
So we know he's still devastated and heartbroken
right.
and doesn't feel his place. Feel like he can find his place. We also know just from the news that there's a possibility. Well, it's a very strong possibility that there's going to be another love interest for him. There's a new nanny coming in mm-hmm. who has a disturbing resemblance to Sybil.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't seen the picture.
Yes.
Wow.
So I'm going to predict that this will be the thing that helps him not just recover from the loss of Sybil and the pain of all that, but also help him kind of figure out his way.
Oh, okay.
You know, because he's kind of adrift right now. Mm-hmm. And once he has this relationship coming through with this new, I believe it's a nanny for baby Sybil,
mm-hmm.
He's going to be able to figure out who he is and how he is, and that's going to help him, you know, move forward. But he's going to still stay with the family.
You think so? Okay,
I do. I hope so. I think a lot of that is my hope.
Well, the one thing this isn't really a prediction. It's kind of a hope because I don't know that there's anything talking to it or any kind of hint at it. But the whole Mary storyline with her talking to the tax man and trying to come up with a plan or some way to get out from this debt burden that I think it's the death debt or whatever that is that
mm-hmm.
they have.
I think it is.
And, you know, obviously Lord Grantham wants him to do it in a lump sum, and she's saying, no, I want to try to have Downton Abbey be self-sufficient, and it may take longer, but anyway. I think it's going to be, in order to do what she wants, she's going to come up with a plan that's going to cause a huge rift between she and her father. Something that's going to really try to cleave them, you know, from each other. We've seen them be together in concert, we've seen them be apart, and I'm hoping that there's something will drive them apart, and I think it's that. Because it'll have, you also have the, you have the generational thing, you'll have the new way, the old way, and all that other stuff. Only when I say I want it to happen, only because I think it would be great conflict, and it'll set Mary up to be somebody to really stand on her own.
I love that prediction, and I think it's a really good one too for Lord Grantham.
Yeah.
Because it will, you know, he's had so much dressing down.
Right.
He's been, you know, beaten down so many times in the last few series. And I think it'll be an opportunity for him to make that leap once they get through it.
Yeah, because
I'm
hoping he'll have a great argument and it'll be a really strong one. But then she'll win out, and then he can feel the pride of a father having
his
daughter really figure it out where he couldn't. So he'll feel horrible as a man because he wasn't able to, but extremely proud as a father because she was.
That'll be redemption.
Exactly. I think it's great. So
anyway. I like that one. That's a great one.
Okay. So there we go. That's our predictions. We got to get at her, Tamara. Let them know where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Tamara Berg, TamaraBerg. And my website is TamaraCentral.com. I've also tweeted out something earlier today about some Downton Abbey fashions that are more modern. So take a look at that.
Okay.
Follow us and let us know on Twitter what you're thinking. I've got conversations going with several people on Twitter about the show.
Yes.
And it's great fun to do. So let us know what you think.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for listening. You can't find me anywhere but here. It says I will be here next week. And we will talk to you next time.
Thanks, everybody.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other After shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later. Cup of tea.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.